Dr. David Schnall.
The person counts under those circumstances because when one loves and when one holds dear, one counts and counts again in order to see what the losses were, in order to see that those who were, who survived, what is their condition. And so from that one gets almost a positive sense of the importance of counts. By the same token, there is an equally long-standing sense of fear and apprehension that head counts are somehow related to ayin hara, that a number of instances, the case of David comes to mind in Tanakh, in which censuses count under those circumstances because when one loves and when one holds dear, one counts and counts again in order to see what the losses were, in order to see that those who were, who survived, what is their condition. And so from that one gets almost a positive sense of the importance of counts. By the same token, there is an equally long-standing sense of fear and apprehension that head counts are somehow related to ayin hara, that a number of instances, the case of David comes to mind in Tanakh, in which censuses improperly taken, statistical analysis, as it were, improperly taken, lead to disaster. And if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara Bracha says that blessings do not adhere to things that are counted. So there's a sense of ambivalence. And that sense of ambivalence, I think, was very much a reflection of the orientation toward understanding the Jewish community sociologically up till about 20 years ago. 20 years ago, a mammoth undertaking, the first National Jewish Population Survey, which was done in 1970-71, which appeared a couple of years after that, available for analysis. And since then, in the last 20 years or so, there has been an explosion of statistical evaluations, of censuses of a variety of different types, including yet another population survey that has just been released, and we'll be talking about that, in addition to specific surveys having to do with political attitudes, having to do with social orientations, ritual behavior, having to do with the community identity, relationship to Israel. There is virtually endless, and probably will continue for the foreseeable future. This sense of ambivalence, however, is still very much alive and well, particularly in the Orthodox community. It's alive and well in the Orthodox community, firstly, because we are, after all, closest to the tradition, and if there is a traditional sense of ambivalence, we're the ones who are going to remember it, and we're the ones who are going to be most sensitive. In addition, up until very, very, very recently, and it's still a hard sell, almost all of these statistical analyses were done by people, organizations, ages, outside to, and one might even say hostile to, the Orthodox community and its values. And as a result, there was a sense that cooperating with these studies would lead to no good, very practical terms. And the equivalent, the analog to that, the Orthodox community in many sectors of it in particular, being by its nature somewhat more insular than the general Jew, not somewhat, I'm being very generous when I say somewhat more insular than the general Jewish community, much more insular, there was a natural tendency, an apprehension about what to what good such studies would be put and what would be used, and the point that was made earlier about who's going to know about this and in what way are our pockmarks going to be opened in areas that border on Rechilis and nothing other. As a result, we have to be extremely cautious, and I wish I could underline that and make the point even more clearly in neon, extremely cautious about making generalizations broadly and in particular about the Orthodox community. We don't know a lot, and I suppose there is a certain value in not being an Eino Yodea, Sheino Yodea. These studies tell us how much we don't know and how much is yet to be done, and the areas in which I think we probably will never have access. In addition, what we do know about Orthodoxy, and I'll make this point later when I focus on that in particular, is probably more reflective of the less insular elements of Orthodoxy. I'm searching for words. I'm not comfortable with right-wing and centrist and left-wing and modernist and yeshiva and chassidish. These are things that disturb me. So let's say that the more insular elements within the Orthodox community will be even less represented and are less represented in the studies that we do have. What I would like to present, and again, following this very cautious line, I don't want to focus primarily on the national population survey that's just been released. I'd like to take a look at trends that have developed and that are either confirmed or reflected in, or some things that perhaps are new in the data that we're just getting now. As a result, I've, in addition to the recent population survey, I have also plumbed a whole onload of community-based surveys done by the CJF and done by the local federations, by and large in the 9 largest Jewish communities, with particular focus on the 5 communities, New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Miami, Los Angeles, if I'm not mistaken, those are the 5 largest Jewish communities, as well as a whole storehouse of material from smaller Jewish communities, which is being held at the National Jewish Data Bank, the North American Jewish Data Bank at the City University. I have also been able, I spent about 45 minutes on the phone the other day with the director of the new New York City study. There is a New York City study that's being undertaken right now. The last study in New York was done in 1981. The data wasn't released until about weren't released until about 1983, 84. So what we know about New York from that study is at least 10 years old. There's a new study that's being done right now. The data are not in yet, but I was able to coax her to share at least a few insights of what is likely to emerge from that material in the immediate future. For those, now a word of commercial, for those of you who would like to follow up on some of this, you might look for 2 articles of mine, one that will appear in Tradition. I've been hearing that it will appear soon for 12 months now, so soon it will appear in Tradition. And another one that, that one deals in broad terms with issues such as identification, synagogue membership, ritual observance. And another article that will appear in the Journal of Jewish Communal Service dealing with orthodoxy and support for Israel and Zionism. Zum Zach. There are general findings dealing with the broad Jewish community I think we ought to look at, much of which confirms things that we already know. That the Jewish community in the United States is a well-educated, affluent, professional, and managerial community. By at least one study, we are far and away the most affluent Jewish, the most affluent ethnic community, measured in terms of family income, the most affluent ethnic community in the United States. 40 points higher than second place, which at least according to that study goes to Japanese Americans. When I mention that in larger gatherings, people shift very uncomfortably. Even if it's true, they have to say it so loud. There was a study done about insecurity of Jews in the United States, and it's reflected very heavily in that data as well, in which Jews were asked whether you think Gentiles would say that Jews make too much money, or that Jews push themselves where they don't belong, or that Jews are too powerful in the United States. And in, at almost every turn, the Jewish respond. Then they ask the same question of Gentiles, do you think Jews are, do you think Jews do? And at almost every turn, Jews were 50% and more likely to say that Gentiles would have a negative approach toward the Jewish position in the United States than the Gentiles were. And then when I quote that data, people sitting around say, yeah, well, they were lying, and it's not true. So I suppose if one wants to be sensitive and one wants to be insecure, and perhaps there's an element in that, then that's reflected in this data as well. In the general Jewish community, we find once again that the young people under 40 are marrying late. As many as half of those under 40 are not yet married, that the tendency toward a low birth rate, which is of course very closely related to late marriage, continues, something that we've seen at least for the last 10 or 15 years and that's been written about at great length. In terms of ritual identification, over 60% of America's Jews do not belong to a synagogue, any synagogue whatsoever. When you look at America's Jews under the age of 40, the number jumps to about 3/4. 75% approximately of America's Jews do not belong to any synagogue. Belong meaning being a dues-paying member. Nothing more, nothing less than that. To give you some grounding as far as that's concerned, those figures are both substantially and statistically significantly lower than church membership in the United States among Christians. Where the number hovers around 50 to 52%, which is not impressive as well, but the Jewish community is substantially lower, and the younger members of the Jewish community are far lower in terms of simple membership in a religion, in a synagogue. As far as synagogue attendance is concerned, again, talking now about the general Jewish community, 12% attend synagogue more than once a month or more, only 12%. 88% do not attend the synagogue at least once a month. 20% say that they never attend at all, including special occasions, bar mitzvah. Those choices were all offered to them, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, high holidays, Passover, Hanukkah, whatever reasons there may be for one to attend. 20% responded in the negative to that question. As far as Israel taking the place of ritual identification and serving as a bulwark for communal activity in the place of ritual involvement, 70% of America's Jews have never visited Israel. Reform Rabbi Balfour Brickner has suggested that we are not a prayerful community. He's absolutely correct. Reform Rabbi Alexander Schindler has suggested that rabbis in the United States should go about proselytizing among the unchurched in America. I urge him to look in his own backyard, where the overwhelming, well, where the bulk of America's Jews are unchurched. Not only Reform, we'll take a look at that. It's also worthwhile mentioning that these elements that I'm tossing about so freely, and forgive me for being so cavalier with these figures. It's not my intention to bore you with numbers, it's the stock and trade. But a lot of these things are related to each other. Synagogue membership, ritual activity, visiting to Israel, things of this type are not primarily, at least in this country, not seen as religious slash theological so much as they are seen social. We know that there are broad relationships between one's social position in life, what Gail Sheehy calls passages, and participation in synagogue and ritual behavior. Young people who are unmarried are less likely to belong to synagogue than couples. Couples with no children are less likely to belong than couples with young children. Couples with young children are more likely to belong than couples with older children. So there's a dynamic that takes place here. When we say that a large proportion, perhaps almost half of America's Jews under the age of 40, remain still unmarried, that single, never married, not divorced, unmarried, it not only plays itself out in demographic terms, it also plays itself out in terms of participation in the community as reflected in synagogue membership. In addition, the new phenomenon, and I'm very interested perhaps in the course of discussion later to hear how this impacts on Orthodox communities, communities that, that you represent, the more common, the newer phenomenon of divorce and single parenthood also seems to have a terrible deadening effect on participation and ritual behavior. The single group in the older New York City study, the study of the early 80s, that had the lowest level of synagogue membership, the lowest level of synagogue attendance, the lowest level of basic ritual participation were single mothers, heads of household. Even lower than single never married. So singles in general, and we're talking now still about the general Jewish community, are a particular issue. And single heads of household seem to be a even more sensitive concern, according to the data that's available. Most of this, however, is supportive of things that we have known for, as I say, at least 10 or 15 years. Numerous studies following one on the heels of the other have outlined these trends, have indicated these patterns. It's not a surprise to find most of these things, although it's rather unnerving to hear them placed in such relief. There were some interesting and, I might say, even surprising, depending on where you sit, maybe even shocking findings that emerge from the 1990 National Population Survey. There is reason to be especially cautious of that survey. We will talk about it in particular in regard to the Orthodox community, where I believe, and many others with me, that there was a serious undercount. But even beyond the Orthodox community, one has to be very, very cautious with any new findings. By definition, they're new, they're tentative. Statistical analysis, statistical data are nothing more than a snapshot, a picture of reality at a particular moment. The further away you get from that reality, if you've looked at old pictures recently, the resemblance fades. One, which I think you probably have heard, it's been widely reported in the press, for the first time we have found that newly contracted marriages, people who married since 1985, a majority of newly contracted marriages in which a Jew was involved was to a non-Jew. 52%, we count.
the first time that we have, intermarriage has been a serious problem. It has skyrocketed by geometric proportion over the last 30 years. Everybody's known this. We've projected that this will happen. It happened. The first time, again, that we have ever found that a majority of marriages contracted within a particular scope, a particular period of time, in this case from 1985 to 1990, were intermarriages. Bear in mind, and we'll return to the point in a moment, these are not necessarily first marriages. And that's another interesting finding that we have to evaluate, and we will in a moment, the relationship between divorce and intermarriage and divorce. In addition, the number of conversions, this seems to be an extraordinary topic, an issue that has separated the various elements of the Jewish community and also has, at least in the 1988 Israeli election, was of primary concern. The number of conversions is infinitesimally small. Probably no more than 5 to 7% of marriages contracted from 1985 to 1990 were conversionary marriages. Tiny, tiny percentage. When I say conversionary marriages, I mean converting to Judaism. I'm sorry, converting to Judaism. In addition, the percentages that I'm tossing about now, and this is one of the problems with the national survey, and if anybody wants to be bored still further to tears, I'll be happy to go into lengthy detail about other methodological concerns. One of the issues is a percentage of what? Because under certain circumstances, they counted 8 million Jews, because they included any intermarried partners, they included people living in with Jews, they included household participants in which one member of the household was Jewish, whether they were married or not, whatever the relationship, roommates and so forth. And there they counted 8 million, and of course the percentages are different. I'm talking about what they called the core Jewish community, about 5.5 million, which is something close to what we might, if you would grant a certain amount of leeway, we might agree as halachic Jews. Including Jews who were born Jewish but profess nothing, including Jews who were born Jewish but profess another religion. Very interesting. Including Jews who were born Jewish who now call themselves Hebrew Christians, Jews for Jesus, and so forth. So a tiny, tiny proportion of such marriages are conversionary. By the same token, however, and this is certainly where your sensitivities would play a role, over 90% of all conversions to Judaism in the United States are done for purposes of marriage. I've seen statistics that suggest as high as 95%, but I will be cautious and conservative and say 90, 91% of conversions to Judaism are for purposes of marriage. So depending on how you cut it, it's a small proportion of marriages, but it's a large proportion of conversions. Second, interesting, somewhat surprising, disturbing finding. First time this has emerged. Of those asked, how would you respond if your son or daughter, if your child declared intention to intermarry, only 1/3 of the respondents said that they would oppose the marriage. In the Jewish community broadly, only 1/3 of those responding to the question said that they would oppose the marriage. Approximately 40% said they would be neutral, and 25% said that they would actively encourage it. So a majority of Jews responding would not oppose an intermarriage, a substantial majority, perhaps 2/3. We have also found, and I alluded to this a moment ago, a new and interesting relationship, and to the extent that the title of this talk technically is Sociological Impacts on the Orthodox Community. This is something that I suspect emerges, although in different form, in Orthodoxy, and that's the question of divorce. For our purposes, the relationship between divorce and intermarriage and divorce. We have known for a long time that intermarried couples are far more likely to divorce than in-married couples. By intermarried, again, I'm talking about a marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew in which no conversion takes place. We've known for a long time, and we have data up through the late 80s suggesting that perhaps 6 times more likely to divorce on intermarriage. I'm not sure that's the kind of argument that necessarily is going to dissuade someone from intermarrying, although it's used quite frequently. Sociologically, however, it's probably correct. What we are finding, however, the other side of the coin, is that there is a greater tendency to intermarry, as the old song goes, the second time around. That people who were in-married the first time are much less concerned about marrying in the faith the second time. for a variety of reasons that, again, you as counselors and pastoral activists know far better than I, that have to do with questions about what will we do with the children the second time around. That's less of a question. Questions about what Ma and Pa and Aunt Sadie are going to say the second time around, that's much less of an issue. Perhaps psychological impact. There was a study sponsored by Lilith Magazine and the American Jewish Committee called Jewish Women on the Way Up, 1988, if I'm not mistaken. Among the questions they asked, whether or not intermarriage was definitely out among never married Jewish women, over 40% said intermarriage was definitely out. Among divorced, single divorced Jewish women, under 25% said intermarriage was out. Among single, never married Jewish women, 40% said religion was an issue for them. Among single divorced Jewish women, only 20% said religion was an issue for them. So it's quite interesting to find, and that's why, again, I think we have to take a look at that finding of 52% intermarriage very, very cautiously, because it does not necessarily reflect first marriages. There's a good reason to believe, and I haven't seen it yet, that there's very little that's been published beyond the popular media reports. There's very little hard stuff that's been published from the new population survey. I'm interested to see what's going to be done with that, ultimately to find out what relationship there is between divorce. But we have already spotted before the 1990 survey such a relationship.
Use the figure of new marriages since 1985.
Marriages contracted since 1985 in which one Jew was a member, not necessarily first marriages. New marriages, that is to say new, no longer than 5 years old. Okay, but not necessarily first marriages. And that's something that has yet to be fully analyzed and evaluated. But as I say, prior to the 1990 study, there's something called the Nine Cities File, which is a composite at the City University Data Bank of community studies of Jewish communities in the nine largest. I mentioned five before. I think Baltimore is included in that. I forget exactly which ones. I have it here. They maintain a file and then try and put all of that data together in a composite. And out of that, we have already seen this factor of divorce, of intermarriage upon divorce, and a second, which I'd like to point to now, which turns a lot of the conventional wisdom upside down. Conventional wisdom has been, and accurately so, and again, I want to be very cautious, and I want to keep saying over and over again, one study, one finding does not a theory make. Be very, very careful about applying this material and see if it jives with your experience. The conventional wisdom has always been that higher education is related to intermarriage. That if you send your kids to the university, away to campus, whatever, that the incidence of intermarriage as a result of an increase in the potential marital pool, the tendency to reach beyond the faith, and as a result, higher education. And it's true. And for a long time, we have found that intermarried couples were among the best educated of all marital relations in the Jewish community. We have a study, this Nine Cities File that came out in the late 80s, that suggests that something may be turning around as far as that's concerned, and that in fact there may be a relationship between intermarriage and lack of higher education. What's happening, it seems, is that such a large proportion of young Jewish people between the ages of 18 and 25 approximately are on the university campus, whichever, that those who do not go to the university have a smaller pool of potential Jewish partners. It's the opposite of what it may have been 25, 30, 40 years ago. And it takes a long time for some of these things to catch up. Not only is there a smaller pool physically, but there's also, how can I say this delicately, a smaller pool emotionally and sociologically. A young Jewish person who does not go to the university upon graduation in high school or soon thereafter is also seen as a less acceptable partner, particularly since the vast majority of his or her peers are at the campus. As a result, the tendency to reach beyond the faith among those who do not go to the university, and it's a small proportion, probably no more than about 25 or 30% of young Jews at that age are not on campus, but that 25% may be the next front line, if you will, of intermarriage. Precisely because the tendency to go to the university is so predominant, so much a part of Jewish culture in the United States, that both physically and emotionally such a person is no longer part of the marriage pool, does not have good market value. I forgive me, I'm being very cynical.
The incidence of apostle queuing affects
this. Yes. I haven't seen much data on, but you're talking about the tendency to live in. And I haven't seen much data in regard to that, nor do I foresee too much coming out of the 1990 study. They really don't get too many folks responding in that regard. Most of the people who are heads of household unmarried are either divorced or singles in the 1990 study.
When you're younger group from 25 or whatever.
Yeah, I have no tradition, is that what Rashi says? There is nothing that I've seen that speaks to the point. It's a very interesting topic, and it's something that I think ought to be pursued, absolutely. Okay. I'm sorry. Yes? In the nine cities study, probably none turn up in that study. And I will wager that none of them are at Yeshiva Plaza in Lakewood as well. One of the problems with all of this data is that we are singularly ineffective. And for good reason, and I'm not sure that we ought to be too much more effective, you know, given the costs and benefits that are involved, and I would love to be on the front line gathering data in Lakewood or in Far Rockaway or in Borough Park or in Muncie, but I don't foresee that happening. Now, the person that I spoke to regarding the New York City study claims New York City, by the definition of the local federation, includes Long Island, Westchester, and they have included Rockland, which would mean Muncie. She claims that they've been able to get responses from certain portions of Brooklyn, certain portions of Queens, and from Muncie that were not available in years past. I await with great anticipation the data, but certainly those people do not show up for the most part. The more insular you move, the less likely this is going to be representative, which is good and bad. It's bad because I'd like to know more about these folks. I don't know that they want me to know much more about them. It's good because it allows us, for better or for worse, to isolate, quote, our people. In other words, this will probably be most representative of the people that you may know as congregants, as colleagues, as friends and relatives and so forth. I will add, however, that there was one study, a doctoral dissertation done at Wurzweiler, as a matter of fact, done by a lady named Bunim of that family, who did an interesting comparison between what she called young Israel wives, Aguda wives, and Kailo wives. And she had access that most of the average sociologist does not have access. And she found some interesting differences between young Israel wives and the rest of the group in terms of practice, between Aguda wives and Kailo wives in terms of attitude. It's a very small study. It's a very pilot study. There are methodological problems. I'll also add that there's an adage in this analysis that goes something like, if I disagree with your conclusions, I will attack your methodology. There's always something you'll find wrong in methodology, especially if you don't like, if there are political sensibilities and social sensibilities about the conclusions that are being drawn. But that is an interesting study. You're the chairman.
Why don't we hold off on questions until...
Okay. Well, this poor gentleman had his hand up, so let's hold off with him, okay?
Thank you. Two points. I think about 20 years ago, I read a study where Jews really came in second place in terms of education and income. And there was a group, I wasn't sure if it was the Episcopalians or the Methodists, that were really in first place.
That may be. The data that I'm reflecting comes out of the early 80s and has stayed relatively, I think, fairly clear and fairly consistent up to the 1990 study.
So that means that Jews, as an ethnic group, would that include the Protestants or no?
What? Ethnic communities in the United States.
Okay, so
now, I have not yet seen the comparisons between the 1990 Jewish survey and the 1990 census data. That has not yet been made available. Okay, but prior to that, that seems to be the case.
Okay, so you're saying that the Jews in both income and...
I'm talking about family income and only family income.
Only income.
Okay. Definitely. However, if you're asking about education, Jews are 3 to 4 times more likely to have a college education than their counterparts in the Gentile community. Jewish women are 2 to 3 times more likely to have a college education than their counterparts in the Gentile community, in the white Gentile community. Jews are 4 to 5 times more likely to hold professional and managerial positions. I mean, this is stuff that we've seen and known about for at least 15, 20 years.
And sure. One last thing is about the single Jews. did you say over 50% of Jews under age 40 are single? Is that what you said?
You're talking about the general Jewish community under the age of 40, not over 50%, but something over 40%.
Over 40% of Jews
under the age of 40 are single, never married.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And that comes out of the 1990 data. Should I take another question? No. The chairman forbids me to take any more questions, but please, we will get back. I'm sorry. I'd like to take a look at the Orthodox community in particular. And what we know about it and what we don't know about it. And there are some serious problems about what we are told about it. The title of my forthcoming article in Tradition is "What the Way They Say We Are." The problem is that there's an extraordinary undercount, certainly in 1990 data. The 1990 data suggests that no more than about 6 or 6.2% of the core Jewish community identifies itself as Orthodox. Now, when we say Orthodox, I'm going to eliminate and avoid all of the boundary concerns. Orthodox simply means that when offered the choice, people said they were Orthodox. Nobody was by the tzitzis, nobody asked what shul they belonged to. Those were things that came later, but we accept it as that. And so it's the most generous and the broadest definition. And by that definition, they still counted no more than about 6.1, 6.2%, depending on where the count, how the count was cut. My guess is that that's off by perhaps about 40 and maybe as high as 50%. Meaning that I believe, and all the data up until the 1990 study suggested, that the proportion of Jews who call themselves Orthodox is probably closer to 9 or 10%, and has remained consistently 9, 10, perhaps 11%, has remained consistent at that for quite a while, since the middle 70s. The New York City study, again including Long Island and Westchester and Rockland, counts about 13% Orthodox, which is approximately, that's data that had not yet been released. That's approximately what it was in the 1980-81 study, which means, contrary perhaps to what many of us had anticipated, and maybe it's an undercount again, there has not been much increase, certainly by no means a statistically significant increase, of Jews calling themselves Orthodox in the New York metropolitan area from 1981 to 1991. That's rather shocking for a lot of us who spend time on, 14th Avenue on Shabbos. It's hard to believe that there has not been the increase. Nevertheless, this is what the data suggest, and either one accepts it for what it is, or one says that they're all off and they're missing the point and they haven't gotten into the core, and yes. I have no easy pshara for any of that. However, what we have, there is, by the way, there's an interesting and somewhat humorous sidelight to all of that, and some of it was uncovered. In the 1990 census, what they did, and I have a lot of respect for the people who carried out the census, people at CJF and the people at the North American Jewish Data Bank, they contracted with a polling agency in Pennsylvania, a professional agency, and the people who took who did the questioning over the phone obviously were not that sensitive and familiar with Jewish life. When they offered people various choices, some people said that they were not Orthodox or Conservative or Reform or Reconstructionists. They said they were Vizhnitz. They said that they were and the people who picked it up on the other end didn't know what that meant, so they put it in the other category. And that potentially is, at least from a statistical term, is disastrous. And the way that they picked it up was that the people who were heading up the study saw an unusually high birth rate in the other category, that there seemed to be a number of people who had very, very large families, and this is something we had never found before. It would have been a revolutionary find that Jews who have no identification with any denomination are having large families. And it was just hard to accept something like that. So they backtrack, and they were able to dislodge some of those that had been erroneously placed and put them back where they belong. Those are the kind of silly things that I guess you can laugh about, but potentially have great difficulty. I don't want to say that in any way that postles the data. Nevertheless, those are the things that can go wrong, and I have serious problem with the idea that there's only 6%. I think it's probably closer to 9 or 10%. A lot of what emerges confirms what we know about the Orthodox community, that it's much more likely to belong to a synagogue. In fact, 65% of Jews who call themselves Orthodox say they belong to synagogue, which is almost twice, certainly substantially more than the general Jewish community. That a majority attend the synagogue once a week or more. Not once a month or more, but once a week or more. In fact, close to about 60%. that it is older by and large. Even though we have great pride in our youth, it is older than the other denominations. That it is less well educated. It's highly well educated. At least the respondents to this particular survey were well educated. The average number of secular school years completed was over 16, which means that the average respondent was college educated, which also tells you that they didn't reach into the more insular elements of the Orthodox community. Nevertheless, even at that, it is less well educated than the general Jewish community. It is less affluent on a per capita basis because families are larger than the general Jewish community. It is far more likely to visit Israel, far more likely to declare itself strongly attached to Israel, far more likely to send its children to Israel. In fact, and this is something that we don't bang the drum about enough, on every measure of support for Israel and support for Zionism, not only is it are Orthodox Jews more likely to respond positively, but they're more likely to respond positively by enormous, substantial, statistically significant differences. And that's a point that we have not, I think, made as forcefully. And now I offer your speculation whether or not the change in government is going to change that as well. I don't know. But certainly up through 1990, that was the case. We know that the Orthodox Jewish community also has a strong attachment to Jewish education. Three quarters of Orthodox Jews under the age of 40 have had a day school education. Average number of years, 11 day school years completed. This is very impressive. Female Orthodox Jews under the age of 40 are not significantly different from male Orthodox Jews under the age of 40 in terms of type of school. They too, in large proportion, attend day schools, and in terms of number of years, they're almost identical in terms of number of school years completed. That has enormous significance. While we certainly are very proud and we're very happy, but that means that, as you well know, and it's been written about in popular terms for years now, that we have a very different female, young female Orthodox Jewish population. A young female Orthodox Jewish population that's extraordinarily well educated, in fact not significantly different in its number of school years and in the type of education than the males. First time we've ever seen that among Orthodox Jews in the United States, and that demands and assertions that are being made are going to have to be responded in different terms and perhaps differently than they ever have before. What is of interest, concern, surprise? In the general Orthodox community, 90% of those who currently call themselves Orthodox also said that they were raised Orthodox by their own definition. Which means that the number of Baalei Tshuva, the proportion of Baalei Tshuva overall, is relatively small, probably under 10%. Among Orthodox Jews under the age of 40, that 10% jumps to about 25%. 25% of Orthodox Jews under the age of 40 say that they were raised in some other denomination. So this is a growing and substantial proportion of the community, and again, a proportion of the community that's going to have to be addressed. Although let me say that, before we go about again crowing about all of this, let me say that while they say that they were not, these 25% claim that they were not raised in Orthodox homes, when asked where they were raised, most of them say things like traditional homes, traditional conservative homes. They were also offered the option conservative / Orthodox homes. So outreach being very, very successful, to be sure, but it's not succeeding at the fringes. It's succeeding immediately next door, if you will. And certainly that's something very valuable and very important, but it has to be seen in that perspective. On the other hand, something that we ought to be more concerned about, 75% of those who said they were raised Orthodox now say there's something else. So while there is influx, there is a gigantic outflow as well. Three quarters of all Jews who now claim to have non-Orthodox affiliation say that they were raised Orthodox. You want me to take questions? I think if you'll forgive me, let me get through this stuff. Thank you. Under 40, anticipation is the highest form of compliment. Under 40, some of that is stemmed. Under 40, the ratio is now about 50% rather than 75%. Okay, so where in the general community, 75% of those who now are something else said they were raised Orthodox, among Jews under 40, only 50%. It's a substantial decrease, but still a very, very large outflow. There was an interesting study commissioned by the American Jewish Committee of 500 rabbis in the United States, including 100 Orthodox rabbis. I'd be curious to know if anybody here responded to that study. It was done by Sam Heilman, reported in 1991. Of 500 American rabbis, one-third of those who currently practice as conservative rabbis say they were raised Orthodox, and one-quarter of those who currently practice as Reform rabbis say that they were raised Orthodox. Now again, I didn't check the home of their parents. I don't know what they mean by that. It's their identification and their identification only, although there is substantial reason to believe that people are fairly accurate, at least in terms of identification. I don't know what the level of Shmiras Mitzvahs may have been, but their parents probably identified as Orthodox if they say so. It's very likely. Very interesting finding in terms of your colleagues interdenominationally. One final cut of material, and then I will be happy to respond further to questions. We can be very happy about what we found. We found that by comparison to the general Jewish community, Orthodox Jews are more likely to belong to the synagogue. By the way, more likely to be married by the age of 40. Two-thirds of Orthodox Jews are married by the age of 40. And they stay married. Divorce rates are much lower. Even though divorce seems to be on the increase in the Orthodox community, that may be, I don't know, but the rates are far, far lower than those in the general Jewish community. They attend religious services more frequently, more regularly. We've said that. They're more likely to have visited Israel. But there's another side to that. The other side is those who don't. There is much work to be done before we begin the triumphal march that's been scheduled on Fifth Avenue or on Ben Yehuda. Because one-third of Jews who call themselves Orthodox do not belong to a synagogue. And while that's still a small proportion by comparison to others, it's still a very large proportion of the community. One-third of Jews who call themselves Orthodox attend religious services less than once a month. 42% of Jews who call themselves Orthodox have never visited Israel. In addition, as you well know, there is a wide variation in basic religious practices, and I'm not talking about chumras now, I'm talking about basic religious practices, and if you like, either now or during the course of questions, I'll be glad to give you some examples, that are not only, and this I think will be of interest to some of you who are, I'm a terribly myopic New Yorker, anything on the other side of the Hudson, including even New Jersey, is out of town. For those of you who are out of town, because while we know that one's passage is closely related, even in the Orthodox community, to membership, to participation, to religious observance, even in the Orthodox community, we're also finding that venue makes a difference, that where the community is located is closely related to its level, to the percentages of ritual observance in that community. And this is something I think that we know well, and that is either denied flatly in certain parts of the community or something that we don't talk much about. So that there are differences, for example, between at least what was found in the old New York study, the early 80s, not only to communities outside of New York, Philadelphia, and I'll give you some examples in a moment, or Chicago, but even to communities contiguous to the city of New York, to the five boroughs, meaning Long Island, Westchester, and Metro West. Under 40, there is greater consistency, but nevertheless, the differences exist. I'll give you a couple of quick examples, and then I'll be happy to take questions, comments, and so forth. Two of the most basic kinds of ritual observances, Shabbos and Kashrus, but not really even Shabbos and Kashrus, people were asked, do you light Sabbath candles? And they were asked, do you maintain two sets of dishes? So certainly nobody can claim that this is machlokes paiskim as to whether or not you have to have one or the other. In New York, for example, they found that 88% of respondents said yes, they light Sabbath. 88% of Orthodox respondents said yes, they light Sabbath candles. In Philadelphia, they found only 65% said yes, Orthodox respondents. In Metro West New Jersey, central and northern New Jersey, Essex County, 63% said yes, they light Sabbath candles. in Baltimore, which has, by the way, the largest Orthodox proportion of the Jewish community that calls itself Orthodox, about 20% according to the Baltimore survey, the largest in the United States, only 65% of those who call themselves Orthodox said that they light Sabbath candles. Now, again, I don't know how that jibes with your experience. I don't know if those may also be the people, many of them, who don't belong to synagogues and who don't come to services regularly. Many of them may be older people. Among younger, yes, we find in particular in the younger contingent that the lowest levels, again, as we said earlier, of ritual observance are among single, never married, and single heads of household. In terms of maintaining two sets of dishes, in the New York City study, 90% said that they maintain two sets of dishes. In Philadelphia, only 52% said they maintain separate dishes. In Metro West, 72%. In Chicago, 64%. Wide variation of as much as 20 or 30%. Now, that either means that that's what's happening, or it means that Jews in New York are less honest than Jews elsewhere, and they don't do it, but they won't tell you. It's hard to say. Nevertheless, and again, we're talking about some of the most basic kinds of religious observances. These are not very sophisticated and not terribly complicated kinds of observances. Nevertheless, there seems to be wide variation. It's something I think that many of us know. I don't know if we've seen it written quite this way. And again, I want to caution that among those Jews under 40, there is greater consistency, although by no means unanimity. And among those under 40, the particular group that is targeted are single, never married, who have lower levels of religious observance, and single heads of household. So while we can be very happy about some of the findings, and while we're doing a lot better perhaps than we ourselves had predicted a generation ago, there is still much, much work to be done right on the front lines. Thank you. I'll be happy to take any comments or questions. Yes and no. Okay. We have a number of studies. The question for those who didn't hear is, do we have any data that matches up the identification of those who claim to have come from Orthodox households, raised Orthodox, and the Jewish education? Not surprisingly, most of the findings that have done that sort of thing have found that those were not day school graduates for the most part. Or I shouldn't say they were not for the most part, that a lower proportion of those had been day school graduates. That coming from an Orthodox home and attending a day school, one has a much higher rate of support. Nevertheless, that such a large proportion now call themselves something else is something that in Philadelphia in particular, 25% of respondents in the Philadelphia study is fascinating. It's an extreme study. I think 1984, 1985, I know there are some folks here from Philadelphia who probably know better about it. 25% of the respondents said they came from Orthodox households. Only 4% now call themselves Orthodox. Well, okay, then perhaps let this gentleman jump in and then, you know. Which one?
75% said they
can't. No. Of 5.5 million Jews, okay, of those who said they were raised in Orthodox homes, okay, 75% no longer call themselves Orthodox.
How many were raised?
Please.
6.2%.
Check with me. No, 6.2% is the current identification. If you check with me afterwards, if I'm not mistaken, it's something under. Something around 25 or 28%, but I have the data. If you check with me afterwards, I'll be glad to give it to you. Okay, this gentleman wants to speak up for Philadelphia, and I have no way of deciding who should
Philadelphia,
speak.
Philadelphia, I'd ask this question. Philadelphia is a very interesting phenomenon, very similar to many communities out of town, where many of the respondents were raised inside what they call traditional congregations. Mm-hmm.
nevertheless, that such a large proportion now call themselves something else is something that in Philadelphia in particular, 25% of respondents in the Philadelphia study is fascinating. It's an extreme study. I think 1984, 1985, I know there are some folks here from Philadelphia who probably know better about it. 25% of the respondents said they came from Orthodox households. Only 4% now call themselves Orthodox. Well, okay, then perhaps let this gentleman jump in and then, you know. Which one?
5 million Jews, 75% said they came.
No. Of 5.5 million Jews, okay? Of those who said they were raised in Orthodox homes, okay, 75% no longer call themselves Orthodox.
How many were raised?
Please.
6.2%.
Check with me. No, 6.2% is the current identification. If you check with me afterwards, if I'm not mistaken, it's something around 25 or 28%, but I have the data. If you check with me afterwards, I'll be glad to give it to you. Okay, this gentleman wants to speak up for Philadelphia, and I have no way of deciding who should
Philadelphia,
speak.
Philadelphia, I'd ask this question. Philadelphia is a very interesting phenomenon, very similar to many communities out of town, where many of the respondents were raised inside what they call traditional congregations mm-hmm. and conservative congregations mm-hmm. who had rabbis from YU. Mm-hmm. and identified themselves by the person who turned them on, mm-hmm. which was the rabbi. The mm-hmm. rabbi was Orthodox. That's who they identified mm-hmm. with, not mm-hmm. with the synagogue.
Could
they
be.
Identified with the rabbi,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you may get an eschewed relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And now the congregations are primarily right-wing conservative,
mm-hmm.
and they're not going to identify themselves because mm-hmm. of the fact that there are women going mm-hmm. up and participating.
Mm-hmm.
So that might
Could
explain
be.
Some.
Could be. Because the Philadelphia study is one of the most extreme studies I've ever seen.
Questions. Number one, for those who identify themselves as Orthodox, how many
are there's only one study that I've seen that has done anything much on intermarriage among Orthodox, and it's a very small study. And it found, the current data show very little. You have to bear in mind that in the 1990 study, Sach HaKol, they questioned 2,500 households, and they were able to turn up no more than about 130 people calling themselves Orthodox. So there's not a whole lot you can do. The one study I saw was Egon Mayer's, which goes back to the early 80s, in which he suggests that of those intermarried, approximately 10% came from the Orthodox community. I don't know, that was 1980-81. I'm not sure I would push that too far.
Is there any statistical studies being done on Soviet Jewry?
I know of, well, all right, without being Megala Sod, the reality is that that's a very sensitive issue. And that lots and lots of the agencies that are involved in settlement and that are also associated with federations and so forth are very protective of the data and of the findings. And it's very difficult to get much. And certainly what you get is of questionable accuracy. The National Population Survey turned up only 50 respondents who were born somewhere else, including Russians, which means that they virtually ignored or missed whatever immigrant community, including Israelis and Russians in the United States. The New York City study focused a large proportion in Brighton and says that it turned up about 200 Russian respondents. I haven't seen, you know, any data from that yet. That will be an interesting piece of information. The gentleman all the way in the back has been very patient, and perhaps we'll get around again. Does patrilineal descent encourage intermarriage among Jewish men? Okay. I tell you, that's more of an ideological issue than a sociological one. Let me put it this way. I have seen no data that tests or studies that particular issue, and the data that we have regarding intermarriage does not ask about patrilineal descent, or whether or not it was a factor in making the decision, or perhaps even more so, whether or not it's a factor in terms of conversion. I will say, however, that it seems to me, and this is purely speculative, that for those people who intermarry, it's not an issue one way or the other. That the number of conversions has been terribly small for at least 10 or 15 years now. I don't know that the movement toward patrilineal descent necessarily had an impact, but I you know, that's speculative, and your guess is better than mine, probably. Can you ask a follow-up? Mr. Donaldson, please. I must say I have no way of saying with any kind of assurity that that has either contributed to or not contributed to, and anything that I would say beyond that would be a guess. What I have heard on the grapevine is that by the same token, more of the Federation funds are going to things like Jewish education than they did 20 years ago, because lots of the strong supporters of Federation, as well as lots of the professionals in Federation, are more sensitive to that concern than they were 20 years ago. Beyond that, I wish I could be more helpful. Sorry. Rabbi.
Would you be able to comment on an article that Samuel Heilman wrote in the Baltimore Jewish Times, where he predicted that Orthodox institutions would increasingly find it difficult to support the schools, the institutions in the near future based upon the population study?
In other words, what Heilman suggests is that the population study such as this is not purely an academic or objective exercise, but that planning and real hard decisions of subvention and of financial support are made based on the findings. And I'll tell you, first of all, I agree to the extent that this data is going to be put to use. This was not done, Federation didn't fund it just so that people like me can play around with it on a computer. My guess is that it's going to be used for planning. Whether or not it's going to have a real impact, that is to say, if they're, you know, the finding they're only 6%, and if they hold by that finding, frankly, I think that's going to be much more a political and social decision at the local Federation level, and that's one more reason why I think it's enormously important. It's only one of many reasons that I believe it's enormously important that Orthodox Jews be actively involved in their local federations, good, bad, or indifferent. And I don't say this without concern for the issues of interdenominational participation and sitting on boards, and I'm sensitive to that, and those are decisions that have to be made on the front line, but there are some crucial concerns, particularly in this economic climate, and particularly because many, many of those who were broad supporters of yeshiva education and Orthodox institutions during the high-flying 80s are not in the position to make those kinds of donations and to extend that kind of support. And I think that it's been a rude awakening for many yeshiva gedolos and kailulim and so forth. Two more. And Providence would have it, there are all three. Metro West. Very interesting study as well, yes.
Metro West. Out of the three major Orthodox synagogues, not one person was called. In addition, the respondents who claimed to be Orthodox, there was a certain percentage that said that they had Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
How reliable?
Okay. I'll agree with you, and I'll take it even a step further. Now, first of all, we're talking about the Metro West Federation study, right? Okay. This is the concern, and as far as the 1990 census, Rabbi Bernstein, Louis Bernstein, made the same comment. As far as the national census, he didn't meet any Orthodox rabbis or members of any Orthodox congregations who said that they were hit by, that they were reached by this this study, and it's a serious problem. It's a serious problem. I'm not doubting it. And therefore, I urge you to be very, very cautious about applying the information. There's another side to the coin which has, I suppose, philosophical implications in all of this. If people call themselves Orthodox but don't light candles and don't have separate sets of dishes, then by what right can we include them in a study of the Orthodox community? No, not necessarily. There are people who didn't belong to an Orthodox synagogue, who claimed not to fulfill these rituals, and nevertheless identified that way. Not many, perhaps 20%, but 20% is still a substantial proportion. Can we reasonably, and here we get into all sorts of very, very complicated issues, which I am not qualified or certified to judge, about where we want to draw the line, and it's an issue that that I think befuddles and that confounds us, because for all of those that we are willing to cut or not cut out, there are others who are willing to cut us out or not. And as a result, I am happy to leave this in the broadest possible realm. If, however, communities such as yours and others feel that they are not well represented in these studies, and in particular, to pick up the earlier point, the studies are being used in practical terms to plan needs, to outline financial commitments and so forth, then I urge you as community leaders to make that known to the local federation and to make sure that the studies are done. But that also means that the Orthodox community is going to have to be willing to open itself up. You know, if you're claiming that nobody reaches us, then you're going to have to be willing to allow them to reach you. And you may find, to your great satisfaction, that things are better than it seems they educated the Orthodox women. Thank you very much. I'll be glad to meet with whomever tries again. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. You can please remain in the room. We'll be ready to start. If you can please remain in the room. We'll be ready to start our next session in just a few moments.
Even if the funding from outside, because kids are scared of cholera and because they're because of the men and because of that.
Yeah, this is the point that I make. Absolutely.
And that. I have seen.